Hi, everyone. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Program's broadcast. I'm very excited to welcome to the broadcast today Rosemary Card. Rosie is a former model, an entrepreneur, and an activist. Rosie is vociferous in her advocacy and support of the LGBTQ community, and she also is a fantastic speaker on subjects like politics, like patriarchy, and like how our culture can be oppressive in our fight to discover who we are and become our best self. She's an old family friend, and she's become an incredible example to many people in her community about what can be accomplished when you follow your passion and your bliss. And she has an amazing voice in our community. So I'm happy to welcome Rosie to the podcast today. So I'm very excited to have Rosie Card on the podcast today. So welcome to the podcast, Rosie.
Thanks so much for having me, Brad.
I've known you for a long time, and I've been in awe of kind of the work that you do. You're kind of a renaissance woman. You're doing so much, but I kind of want to start at the beginning. Can you tell us a little bit? We'll get into, you know, the modeling, the entrepreneurship, the kind of social media influencing, and the work that you're doing around that. We'll get into all of that, but I want to ask you to talk a little bit about your background, about where you came from, and how that informs all the work that you're doing today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am from originally Utah, mostly Salt Lake City. I spent some time as a kid. Our family lived in New York when I was like 8 to 12 years old. But for the most part, I was raised in a very devout Mormon household, surrounded by all other Mormons. Basically, kind of everyone that I knew, to my understanding, except for the time that we lived in New York, were Mormons. Mm-hmm. And when I was about 16, I moved to New York for the first time by myself. And that's when I really started to get exposure to people who lived and thought and acted differently than basically anyone that I had experienced up until that point. And that was a really important turn in my life, just to see that there were people who lived differently than right. I was taught. And they were incredible people, which seems like so like duh. But as a child, a Mormon child, my understanding was good people live like Mormons. Mm. And people who don't live like Mormons are not bad people, but maybe just less good. And that's not, I don't want to make it seem like that's the teaching from the church, but that's what I absorbed as a child.
Right. Can I ask what you were doing in New York? What brought you to New York? What part of your journey that was?
Yeah, so I had this unique opportunity to, halfway through my junior year, sign a 3-year modeling contract with Elite Model Management in New York. So I signed out of normal high school, got set up with like an online high school, and then I moved to New York. Originally, I lived in a model apartment, which is like a brownstone near Grand Central Station that housed 14 girls. I lived there for a while, and that was an incredible experience. And then I also spent a time living with my agent and his boyfriend. They were really sweet to allow me to spend a summer with them, which was super helpful.
I mean, for what I assume is a pretty conservative culture, at least that you grew up in, that's a pretty radical idea to allow your daughter at 16 to go off to New York to model. So you must have had at least something in your family saw this value in having a very diverse experience. I can imagine even that your parents might have had doubts, or maybe they got a lot of criticism from other people for allowing you to do this. So can you speak a little bit to that dynamic of going from Salt Lake City to becoming a model in New York City at 16?
Yeah. So I think there's a few elements that played into it working. And I'll just say, like, myself now, imagining myself having a 16-year-old, I have the hardest time being like, yeah, I would let her move to New York or Singapore or Japan by herself. In my mind, I'm like, not a chance in this world. But I think one thing that's really wonderful about my parents is their willingness to do things differently. It definitely, what they say is like, it was not in our plan for our daughter to become a model at 16 and move out. But they felt like it was in God's plan for me. And they definitely received a lot of flack. A lot of people thinking like, you know, what are you doing? Which I think those questions were pretty justified, but, yeah, they just kind of let me go for it. And I had some exposure. Obviously, we lived there a few years prior, so New York wasn't a completely new place to me.
Right.
And it was just kind of like that going out on our own was just kind of like the story that we were raised with. Mm. And so it was expected to leave home at 18. And so I think it just felt like I was just doing it 2 years early.
You talk about that experience, that exposure, and realizing that the idea that the culture in Utah teaches that, you know, good people live like the other people in Utah, you know, don't smoke, mm-hmm. don't drink, you know, very conservative. And you talk about kind of understanding that there was goodness in all kinds of people all over. Was there, I've never asked you this, was there trauma also to that experience? And if so, was there some parts of it that were traumatic or painful? And are there lessons from that for you as a person today?
Yeah. I only did it for 2 years, but those 2 years like have some really high highs and some really low lows in my life. Really incredible, glamorous, exciting experiences, but also extremely isolating, very lonely, and then just situations that I don't think any person, let alone any child, should be put into in regards of like, and things have changed now in the industry, thank goodness, mm-hmm. but this was around like 2005 to 2007. It was totally normal for a 16-year-old girl to be sent to some random photographer's apartment in Brooklyn to do a photo shoot and for him to ask me to take my clothes off.
Right.
And I'm a child alone with this adult male. He's technically in this situation like my boss, and I want to impress him. And I'm scared, like, if I say no, am I going to be in danger? Is he going to get mad? Like, just some really bad situations
mm-hmm.
in that way. And then, again, and I may have already mentioned this, like, just really isolating. It was a really, really lonely time in my life. And as most young girls are, very focused on my appearance. I already was kind of hyper aware of what I looked like. Mm-hmm. And then to have my job and whether or not I could pay rent and like pay my bills determined what I looked like. That was a really, it was a lot to process as a kid.
I've seen you share about this, you know, on your social media. And really quick, will you just, I'll ask you to do this again at the end. Will you tell people what your handle is on Instagram?
Yeah, so it's just at Rosie Card, RosieCard.
I've seen you share about your modeling experience. I have two questions with regard to that.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is like, what are the reactions you get? And then the second question is, why is it important for you to share your experience and your lessons from your experience in modeling?
I think first there's always an element of shock. The idea of models now with Instagram and influencers is much more of a common thing. But I don't pose myself as a model on my Instagram now. That's not what I do. And so when people hear that, like, oh, when you were a kid, you were an international model and like going to castings with names like Carly Kloss, people who are very well known today. It's always pretty shocking to people, especially kind of the platform that I have now, and that I was involved in this like completely different world. And I think what motivates me is a lot of the hardness that I experienced in modeling was contrasting the life that I was living with what I had been taught a good Mormon girl did. And so a good Mormon girl wore a one-piece swimming suit, but I went to work and was wearing like a bikini bottom with a jacket and nothing else. Though in my mind, I'm like, okay, but this is more than like, I'm technically covered more than a swimsuit, but I'm also technically not wearing a shirt. What's the right thing to do here? And just kind of immense shame and immense fear that like, oh, what if someone back home saw this picture of me? What would happen to me? What would happen to my reputation? Would I get in trouble at church? Stuff like that. And I just think there's important lessons, though most people won't have those experiences. The themes of like shame and fear are very, I think, what's the word I'm looking for? Universal experiences.
In a way, kind of what I'm hearing from you is you're a bit of a misfit because you don't really fit into one easily definable category. And I imagine you offer lots of comfort to all of us other misfits out there. That's kind of what I'm hearing. And I'm wondering if you get that kind of response from what you do, that people are reaching out to you who do feel like they don't fit in or something's wrong with them. And your voice to them is this voice that offers warmth and comfort and belonging.
Yeah. I feel like I kind of draw two extreme reactions from people. Either someone's going to look at me and be like, okay, you are a Mormon woman in her 30s who owns a Mormon-focused company. They have a very specific idea of what I should be to fit that mold. But I'm single and have no children, which is kind of like the first strike against me. And my ideas and the things that I talk about and the way that I talk about the church very much do not fit that mold. And so that draws a strong reaction from one crowd. But then there is the other crowd where they also feel like they don't fit the cookie cutter mold. And it feels like a huge sense of relief to them. Like, oh, not only like, is there someone else? But I can see that there are thousands of someone else in this community. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that like you're hiding or that I'm hiding. And it's not something that I feel shameful about or I try to kind of like, quote unquote, get over. Like, it's very much who I am and I'm happy it's who I am.
I want to talk about, I have so much that I could talk about because you really are, you have such a compelling story. You push boundaries. You push against status quo. You push against cultural ideas. You push against patriarchy. Mm-hmm. You've written letters to church leaders, to Mormon church leaders, stating your opinion about things like how many women are speaking in their semi-annual conference. Can you talk a little bit about balancing your faith and your belief, your actions, really, where you see value in kind of pushing for progress, pushing for improvements toward a more inclusive, loving kind of whole community? Can you talk about that balance?
Yeah, absolutely. First, I would just want to say, like, I think I am, or I know I am the way that I am, even though it's so different than what my culture has taught me to be. I firmly believe that like my questioning of authority and trying to stick up for the little guy or the underdog is like a direct response or reaction to like the doctrine that I believe in, like my fundamental faith. So I think that is really important, but when I'm able to see that my actions and who I am today has roots in like my fundamental beliefs, that's really empowering to me. So I'm okay with pushing against boundaries that I feel like are more just cultural. Because I think as we clear out some of those boundaries, we kind of broaden the circle. It makes more space for people who are different. And it makes more space for different thoughts and ideas and perspectives. And it just makes the fundamental beliefs that I think are true and important more accessible to others, where the boundaries, in my mind, often are like hedges. You know, we talk about boundaries in therapy and like they're wonderful, but in this regard, they can be harmful.
It's anytime you're challenging something like patriarchy, you're gonna attract that audience who doesn't want to give up that power, right?
Yeah.
So I know you rub some people that way. Has it been a challenge in your family? Has it been a challenge with your parents as you become kind of this maverick Mormon? Has that been difficult for you to negotiate with your family? You have four sisters, two parents?
Yeah, I think in the very beginning, like I remember the first time in front of my family, I referred to myself as a feminist. And my mom, bless her soul, immediately just said, "Don't call yourself that." Like it was like I was calling myself a dirty word.
Right.
And I just left and I was like, "Mom, you raised four daughters as a working mother. You own your own business. You encourage us to be independent. We, most of us, own our own business. Like, I hate to tell you, you're a feminist. Like, like I know that it means one thing to you, and that might be like man hating, bra burning, but the like feminism at its core, like you're all about it." But as myself and my siblings have become more comfortable in these topics, my whole family has embraced it more. There are different things that I talk about that initially might kind of like make them a little uncomfortable. But for the most part, my family has been wonderfully supportive. My dad, he works at the church in a department that is known to kind of like their job is to make sure that like teachings stay consistent and that people who are teaching stay in line with those teachings. So we will have different perspectives on how things are handled. And I think we kind of understand what conversations we can and can't have. But my dad has just been wonderfully supportive of me always, which I really appreciate, that even if he disagrees with something, he still supports me.
You know, I wasn't planning on going to this next topic this quickly, but it kind of came to me when you were just answering that, you know, you've expanded into politics. You've expanded to talking about politics and writing letters. I think you have proudly been banned from at least one of our senators here in Utah. You're not banned, but blocked, I should say, blocked.
Well, not even blocked. He has me restricted. Yeah, so I can comment and I can see my comments, but no one else can.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of a sneaky way without getting in trouble, because I don't think they're technically allowed to ban constituents.
That's right.
So,
but it kind of reminds, the reason I'm going to this a little bit earlier than I'd planned in our interview was, you know, when your mother said, "Don't call yourself that," and you said, "Mom, you raised daughters in a feminist way." Like she had an association with that word.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're doing kind of a similar thing with your audience, aren't you? Where you're trying to help them see that the values that they've been taught, the values that are nurtured and taught by their church, that they're in line with things that I think they've been taught are the enemy. Mm-hmm. and they're not. And I'm wondering about that, about, I guess my broader question is, your step into the political arena, where does that come from? Why that? Where does that motivation come from to get into that area?
first and foremost, I'm really passionate that, like, women, you know, that great quote, women need to be where the decisions are made. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we need more female leaders in all important organizations. My church, absolutely. Our government, absolutely. And so a couple years I ran for city council, and that was kind of my first really jumping into the political pool. And then earlier this year, I saw probably like early fall, I saw a very popular Mormon influencer who was sharing just a lot of QAnon stuff, and stuff that I just really feel like is dangerous and disagree with. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, it's a risky thing talking about politics, or at least we're told that you know it's, you shouldn't talk about it. And I thought, well, the people on that side aren't afraid to share, and they're definitely influencing people. And I have this platform, and I think I would regret if I looked back and saw that I had an opportunity to share and I didn't. And so I just kind of dove into it and started sharing my thoughts on politics and the election and different things that our Utah senators were doing and involved with. And initially there was a response of like, I don't follow you for your politics. And my response to that is always like, I'm actually not taking requests here, you know, unless you want to somehow start, if you want to sign up for a Venmo subscription to supporting my cause. But until then, like, you don't get to decide what free content you receive on this account. So I just went for it. And the response was overwhelmingly supportive. And I think that there are just so many women who are hungry for so many different topics and so many different resources, but we've been told for so long that we shouldn't be involved in that. That it's not nice for women to talk about politics, and that they don't know as much as their husbands, or whatever the story is. For whatever reason, we've been kept pretty quiet on that topic and others. And I've just found that, like, when you talk about the uncomfortable things, there's like this great David Sedaris quote that I really love that says, it's usually the thing that you're most uncomfortable with that people will most connect with. Mm-hmm. And I found that to be very true, and especially in this political aspect on social media.
I think one of the interesting things about your story is that your parents raised you to be fiercely independent and opinionated and a force of nature. Mm-hmm. They couldn't control where that force would go, right? Because that would be at odds with they raised you in essence to kind of be your own person separate of them, and you've become and are constantly becoming that person. As a result of that, you've done many things. You've started a business. Tell us a little bit about your entrepreneurship and kind of how that also informs and impacts the influencing and the teaching that you do.
Yeah, so I have a company called QNOR. It's a women's clothing company, and it started initially, it's been around for about 5 years, and it started as a LDS women's temple dress company. So when women go to a Mormon temple, which is kind of like our highest form of worship, you wear a very basic, very modest white dress. Everyone is dressed in full white. And the styles, the only way I can describe them, were just like pioneer costumes and really uncomfortable, bad fabrics. And the first time I bought my first temple dress, I remember looking at my mom and being like, well, what's with this? And she was like, it's just kind of the way it is. And so when I was in my mid-20s, I decided that someone needs to make more comfortable, more attractive temple dresses. And so that's how my company got started. We now offer all sorts of, you know, just everyday clothing. It's a unique thing to think about, that such a very Mormon product was what kind of built my platform to share essentially a different way to Mormon.
Right. I mean, you really are kind of a study in contradictions. I said Renaissance woman, you know, you kind of do have your interest in your mind in so many different areas. That's one of the things that I admire about you and I find so compelling about what you're doing. You mentioned earlier therapy, and I think you've mentioned that on your platform also. So can you talk a little bit about, obviously our audience is a therapy-minded audience. Can you talk about therapy coming into your life and how that's become a part of all that you are and the work that you're doing in and out of the therapist's office?
Yeah, so I started going to therapy for my first time when I was in college. Mm-hmm. I was just dealing with just kind of minor feelings of depression and anxiety. And my dad is not a stranger to those feelings. And so he just said, you know, Rose, maybe you should try talking to someone. And so I met with a great, you know, BYU therapist for, or I guess, I don't know if she was technically through BYU, but at least an LDS therapist for a few months. And then I started to go, I went back to therapy more consistently, probably starting like 3 or 4 years ago. And a lot of that would be aligned with when I started to share more of my honest ideas, thoughts, and opinions on social media, because I do receive a lot, as you know, I receive way more support, but the negative feedback can be especially difficult when it's people who are from your same faith. You know, they know the things to say that can really tap into that shame. And I love therapy so much. And I just think everyone should be in therapy, and I'm so grateful for it. And I've seen probably three, four therapists over the last 3 or 4 years. And they've all played like great important roles. And yeah, I'm really grateful for them.
What would you say to either the individual or the parents who, it doesn't have to be LDS, we've talked about this, a very small percentage of our audience is probably LDS. It probably mirrors the population in the world. There's no LDS angle to what I talk about on these podcasts. But we do have people that come from the Jewish faith, the Orthodox Jewish folks. We have Muslims, we have Catholics, we have people that are secular. What would you say to those folks coming from one of those more conservative places that says, you don't really need therapy, you just need to follow the commandments. You need to do what your faith tells you to do, and you'll be happy and free of any kind of significant pain in your life. And therapy is not necessary. Just follow God's teachings and everything will be solved.
Yeah, I think that's probably a really common message amongst a lot of houses of faith. I believe that God or, you know, heavenly parents, as I like to say, they want us to have experiences here on this earth. And just kind of like my parents taught me to, you know, leave the home and go out and become an individual. I also believe that like my heavenly parents want me to be independent and make choices and experience consequences. And I believe that they offer help and support in, you know, a billion different ways. And so I look at therapy no different than I would like going to a doctor if I had a medical, like a stomach ache, you know? I believe modern medicine is a gift from God and a beautiful tool to take advantage of. And I also think therapy is a beautiful gift and great resource that we have at our fingertips. And so I don't see scripture or a church building as the only opportunities to access a higher power, I believe that I can find them wherever I need them. And if that's in the therapist's office, awesome. If that's in a temple, awesome. If that's in, you know, a hiking trail, awesome. I don't believe that their hands are tied and that they only can reach us through scripture and a church building.
You really are a study in what therapists might call the middle path. You know, you're a both and person. Mm-hmm. You're not an either or person, which I think is not the only sign, but a sign of mental health is being able to embrace two seemingly opposite ideas at the same time. So I just wanted to offer that to you.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you another question right now. This is another one of those questions that could be tough. I don't know if I can ask it in a way, but it's probably the most challenging question I think I'll ask you today, and it might be really easy for you to answer. So I've seen the impact of the Mormon faith, the Mormon culture, other faiths also on the LGBTQ community. And I know you've been fairly outspoken in your support mm-hmm. of the LGBTQ community. So I guess I just wanted to give you a chance to speak to those people who feel like their faith doesn't hold space for them, that something is fundamentally wrong with them, and who they love is not acceptable before God. Would you have a message for them, I suppose, is the question.
Yeah, so I look at my church organization as kind of like a person. And I don't believe, I believe like God's truths and doctrine are beautiful and perfect. I do not believe that churches are perfect. And I would say to someone who doesn't feel like there's room for them within their church community, I would first say like they're probably totally justified in feeling those feelings. Mm. That there's probably really good reasons why they don't feel that way, why they don't feel accepted. And that I'm so sorry. And I wish it wasn't that way. What I try to make it known is like, there's always a seat next to me in the pew. And that even though there's no way I can know what that person is experiencing, as a member of the LGBTQ community and a very conservative faith, I'm willing to sit with them through it and offer the support that I can. And I'm willing to kind of try to stand between them and some of the blows if possible. But yeah, that's like one of the hardest things, especially when your church that you love is also involved in like backing some really bad legislation that affects negatively the rights of that community. It's really hard. It's hard sometimes to, you know, pay your tithes and wonder like, is this going to be used to hurt people I love? That's just really hard.
Again, you have so many passion projects, and you're doing so much good in the world. I've mentioned that you're fighting against patriarchy. You know, you're speaking out in the social justice world. Can you talk a little bit about your advocacy and the role that you play, or that you think organizations maybe even have to play in the improvement of social justice across society?
I feel a sense of responsibility. You know, my community is the Mormon Church, you know, one of a few that I have, but that's probably my main community. And I am, in some regard, a voice within that community that has some type of platform and influence. And I do think that there's, because I care about both my church and the people that it influences, both in and outside of my church, I feel like there's a responsibility to try to hold my community accountable. Not like I don't want it to seem like I think I have all this power that possibly I don't, but I do think I have some level of influence, especially as an active member. It's very easy for communities like mine to, if someone's not a part of it, just to be like, oh, you're a dissenter, you know? But I'm very much a part of this community and I'm very much a believing member. Mm-hmm. And so I do think I have influence, and I kind of see it as like, if there's a hole in the boat, there's a value in people from both sides, both outside and inside of the boat, working to plug that hole. And unfortunately, the Mormon Church has a very racist past. And we do not have a good track record on some really important topics, even actions within the last couple of years that were, in my mind, we fell short. And I think we have a responsibility, because we have such a love for this community, to want it to be its very best. And treating everyone as equals, and treating them how Christ would treat them, I think is the very best that our community can offer. And so when we fall short, I don't think we're doing ourselves any favors. We're not doing anyone a favor by turning a blind eye to that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Your power is your voice. You have a voice. And I don't just mean that you, Rosie, as a random individual, have a voice. I mean, I've known you for a long time, and your voice is, it's a voice in the wilderness. It's a courageous voice out there. And so that's your power, is you're speaking truth to power is what you're doing. And that's always compelling, at least to me.
Thank you.
So my next question for you is, I can imagine people, both your detractors and your supporters and fans, I can imagine both sides of that equation saying this next same thing to you. It's the thing I'm most curious about as you hold these two worlds that you hold together. Why stay in it? Why stage a revolution from the inside? Why not get out of it? I can imagine detractors saying, if you don't like it, get out of it. I can imagine members probably saying, members of the LDS Church and faith, saying to you, if you don't like it, get out of it. I'm sure you've heard it from both sides. But I know you haven't answered the question, because I know how thoughtful and intentional you are about what you do in your life. So that's the question. Why stay in it and stage the revolution from the inside? Why not get out of it and stage a revolution from that perspective?
I hear that all the time. And the answer is like pretty basic. And it's that I think sometimes we take the idea of leaving the faith that you grew up in too lightly, in the sense that, like, you know, active members who disagree with me might say, like, if you're so upset, if there's so much that you want to change, just leave.
Right.
And I want to be like, just leave? Like, just leave one of the core pillars in who I am? Like, I don't, even if you stop going to church on Sunday, I don't think you can leave the faith really that you grew up in. It will always have a huge influence on your thoughts and how you act. As, you know, and I could be wrong on that, but that's just what I imagine. But I really believe the fundamental teachings. And it's the way that I've learned to connect to my God, my higher power. And I like that. Mm-hmm. And so it would be, you know, aside from what I just mentioned earlier, it probably would be easier to leave if I didn't have to sit through uncomfortable church lessons, and if I didn't have to deal with, you know, both people in and outside of the church, you know, coming at me for the way that I share things. You know, active members are really mad at me for being an ally. And people who are not in the church are really mad at me for saying that I'm an ally and being involved in the church. Mm-hmm. But I don't take that decision lightly. And there's still good that it brings into my life. And a lot of the good in my life is because of my belief in the teachings of the church. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I stay, because I believe in it, I guess.
You know, Rosie, you and I have different paths through life, from the beginning to the middle to where we are right now. And I just want to say, I'm glad you're where you're at.
Thank you.
I think you offer something from where you're at that other people can't offer. And I know it's uncomfortable. And I know, because you've shared with me, you get pushback, you know. Mm-hmm. It's actually, you know, on your social media, the pushback sometimes. And I just want to thank you for on behalf of the other misfits in the world. Thank you for creating a place where us misfits can belong.
Absolutely. That's a great honor. Thank you.
Kind of a tradition with our guests is to ask one last question about self-care. About your self-care practice. It doesn't have to be perfect. Maybe you struggle with it, but what do you do to take care of yourself, especially for those that I interview that are carrying the burden of supporting other people in their suffering as you do? What do you do to take care of yourself so that you have the energy to be there for those that you love and that you serve?
A new thing that I'm doing is I have cleared out a space, a kind of a spare bedroom in my home, and turned it into like a yoga meditation space. I try not to bring my phone inside of that room, other than if I'm using it, my phone, to play music or something while I'm in there. Just to kind of disconnect. But I did see this funny tweet the other day that said, sitting outside of your house in your car on your phone is self-care, and I don't care what you have to say about it. And I think that's so true.
Love it.
I call it my car sits. Like, I'll get home and I'm just like sitting in my driveway in my car on my phone for a minute, and it just feels so good to me. Yeah. So
there are things that I do for self-care that I know people would judge me for. So I love that quote. I love that tweet that you shared. Well, it's an honor to be considered a friend and to know you, Rosie, and thank you for what you do. Before we wrap, I just want to again give you the opportunity to tell people where to go to find out about your work.
Yeah. So on Instagram at Rosie Card, Rosie spelled R-O-S-I-E and C-A-R-D for card. And then I'm also at Rosemary Card on Twitter.
Thank you, Rosie. Thanks for taking the time to visit with us today.
Thanks so much, Brad. Better year you'll be. Better year you'll cover me. There's a hole inside my head, leaking at the same sense. Talk no tongue, speak clean. Shadow slowly chose.